to Fancy Town Crimes Podcast, a podcast about crimes in fancy towns told by middle-class broads.
All right, we ready to start?
Yeah, let's
FTC?
Let's do this thing. Do you see this little hand?
Can we please let this be our intro?
Yes, just like this little hand, just like. It reminds me of like the Titanic, like coming down the window, just like, ah.
You have a human attached to you.
I do, yes.
Well, hello, everyone.
Hey, guys.
If you can't tell, we are both drinking wine this time.
Woo! Cheers, clink.
Cheers, clink. And you know what's really sad is actually on my Facebook memories, it came up that this time last year, we were on our wine trip.
I know. I was literally going to text you about that and be like, oh my gosh, it's so timely that we're doing the place that we're doing, but then I realized this wasn't where we went, but for some reason
it was close.
It was close, but like it I was like, oh my gosh.
I think we went to Newport for a day.
Did we?
I think we went to a winery in Newport. Yeah.
We did. You're so right. So this is super timely. We're doing Newport, by the way, Rhode Island, not anywhere else.
Why? I know of another Newport. Is there a Newport, California?
Newport Beach?
Yeah, probably. No, this is the classy Newport in Rhode Island that we went to and found out we did not belong.
We do not belong there, but we're going to drink your wine anyway.
Boom. 100%.
Bam a lamb.
And if you don't know by now, this is Megan.
And this is Taylor.
And it is almost Thanksgiving.
Oh my gosh, I cannot believe.
And Bodhi's crying in a corner.
I thought that was Piper, honestly, so.
Crying in a corner because he is eating a blanket and doesn't understand that he can't eat the blanket and acts like I'm torturing him for eating a blanket.
Piper does the same thing. She hides her toys in the blanket and then tries to chew on the toy through the blanket. And we're like, nope, this is a new blanket. This is not your blanket. And if you hear movement and you hear little noises and you hear scratching happening on my microphone, I apologize. That's it's my baby. I'm feeding her right now, and she just keeps grabbing my headphones.
You know, honestly, it's kind of fitting because I'm a little bit behind on wine and crime. But I was listening to Mom Crimes on the way home.
I know. I've listened to that. So, funny story with wine and crimes. I forget which episode it was. I think it was actually the it was like the military crimes or whatever it was. So that one came out right around the time that Ellie was born. And I actually, oh my, I listened to that for, I listened to that for 6 weeks straight because I, hashtag mom life, couldn't listen to it all at once. So I listened to it only when I showered, which took me 6 weeks to get through the whole episode. But anyway, yes, I did listen to the Mom's Crime one, and that one was so interesting. I loved like all of the stuff that Lucy brought forward at the beginning of that episode.
Oh yeah, the breastfeeding stuff was super interesting.
So fascinating.
But I was listening, and I haven't made it all the way through. I haven't got to Amanda's case yet. But Kenyon's case was the case that I almost picked for today, and I was like, wait, why does this sound so familiar?
No,
and then I was like,
way.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a dark case.
It was rough.
Yeah, you and Kenyon, you're so on the same wavelength with your cases. Faux shizzle.
Oh, I feel like I'm an Amanda.
You are more like an Amanda, but your cases are more like a Kenyon.
True.
Yeah.
That's very true. Because I just, everything Amanda says, I'm like, yes, I feel.
Yes,
and the blue hair, too. I mean, mine's currently purple, but it was blue for a good long time.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I feel like I'm more of like just like a random person that would be friends with them. I don't know if I actually like am one of them as a
I would say that you are a Lucy.
Am I more of a Lucy?
I think that you're a Lucy because she's just very wholesome and she tries to get the whole gang together and she's like the mom of the group. Like she's always like, don't say that, we're gonna get emails.
So Ellie is currently looking up at me. She was doing some really weird thing with her tongue and now she's just staring at me and giving me this weird smirk and I'm like, girl, what do you do with
Mom Crimes, hashtag Mom Crimes.
Hashtag Mom Crimes. What are you doing, little one? Are you done eating? Are you going to eat again?
I do so thoroughly enjoy, and I wish we were recording at the time, Jeff coming in. He has embraced the full dad. I mean, that little contraption. He's full dad.
Oh, yeah,
that
he's full dad.
That contraption he was wearing, where he was like mama kangaroo with the baby attached. I was like, this is what I've come for.
Oh, yeah. And honestly, he's the only one that can wear it. She will not go in it for me. She just screams when I try and put her in it. But when Jeff puts her in it, it's like, you know. And it's so funny. So he had to watch her while I went to my postpartum appointment. And all of his coworkers were like, oh, are you nervous to watch her? And he was like, I watch her like every morning and every night. And he's like not one of those dads that's like, I'm babysitting my kids. He's like full on.
You
like,
shouldn't be.
No, you should.
Oh my God. I think that's a very new, like, actually I take that back. My dad watched me just as much as my mom did. My dad used to take me to the bars when I was like really young and my mom would have to work nights, and he would take me in my little car seat and sit me on the bar at like the 99.
That's the 99 restaurant.
That's true New Hampshire life right there. Like, that is 100% New Hampshire life.
I just had a big spit up all over me. Oh no.
I think we need to take a slight break.
Slight pause for my coughing baby.
Be back. Mom's off duty.
I'm back. I dropped off the baby in the pacifier to the daddy.
Perfect.
But anyway, yes, okay, good. I am. And I got some water. Now I can rehydrate after feeding the little one.
I think you need more wine.
I know. I'm like, I'm running low. So I'm excited to hear what case you chose for Newport, because since you were thinking of choosing that crime, I'm like, what crime did you choose?
It's not as bad as my normal ones. I almost went for a crime where nobody died, but then you know me.
And it spiraled out of control and everyone died.
Yeah, kind of. That's my life.
What is the wine that you are drinking? What is your wine pairing for this crime?
It is Woodbridge, the cheapest red wine I could find.
I love it.
Actually, I do like Woodbridge, and that was one, that's like the Robert Mondavi, like, it's like a part of it.
Yeah, like, yeah, the, I wanted to call it like the economy version of Robert Mondavi.
It is.
But I don't know what they call it, but yeah, it is like the.
It is, and it's nice. It comes in the little, like, small 750 milliliter packs for me, so I enjoy it.
Solid.
Little cab. What about you?
I love that. Mine is a Tuscan. I didn't actually read what the label was because I was pulling it together for a brand sponsorship thing. So I was like, gotta get some wine. And so this was the wine, but it's a Tuscan wine that we had gotten, and it's really beautiful. It's slightly carbonated. It's red. Definitely recommend. Yeah, it's lovely. It's nice.
And like mine is red. And that's all I know, the color.
I know it's from Tuscany. It's probably a I don't know what it is. It's not a Cab Sauv, because we don't usually get that. So I don't know what it is. I don't know. I'm trying to like, it might be a Pinot Noir. It's a little heavy for a Pinot Noir, but I'm not sure. But it's delightful. So,
well, there you go. That's all you need is a little delight in a glass.
Delight in a glass. That's what they say about me.
You're just a little ray of sunshine. Actually, you really are, especially compared to me. You're a ray of sunshine. And I do not feel bad about that at all. I like being a ray of pitch black.
You're like a moonshine. You're like the shine coming off the moon.
I'm a bitch. Yeah. And I own it. I don't feel bad about it.
That should go on a shirt.
I would wear it every day.
I'm a bitch and I own it. Me. I love that.
Well, why don't you take us to Newport before I embarrass myself further?
Here we go. So Newport, Rhode Island, is a seaside city.
Say that 5 times fast.
I know. That was a little bit of a tongue twister. It is located in Narragansett Bay, approximately 33 miles southeast of Providence, Rhode Island, 20 miles south of Fall River, Mass.
That's where Bodie's from.
Bodie's from Fall River. And then 74 miles south of Boston and 180 miles northeast of New York City. So in case you were wondering exactly where Newport is, that's exactly where it is.
Do you have the coordinates?
Friend? I could give them to you if you wanted. I don't have them in front of me, but I could Google them. It is known as a New England summer resort and is famous for its historic mansions and its rich sailing history. So if you've never been to Newport, there are all of the mansions right along the water there. They are crazy cool. They have tours of those mansions. So highly recommend if you ever find yourself in Newport.
They also have that blues bar that we stumbled upon that ended up being amazing. The jazz bar, remember?
That was,
I forget what it's called, but it has a big like blues sign in front of it.
That was so much fun. Yeah, that was an absolute blast. I was looking at those pictures and I was like, oh, take me back. So it was, the location of the first U.S. Open tournaments in both tennis and golf, as well as every challenge to the Americans Cup between 1930 and 1983. So it's a really cool city. There's so much, there's just so much to find there too. And they have a vineyard, at least, I don't know how many, I'm sure they have multiple, but they have the Newport Vineyards, which has some really lovely wines that you can check out there. Jeff and I, fun fact, went on our 1 year dating anniversary to Newport.
And
yes, everyone thought that we were there for our 1 year wedding anniversary. So that was really interesting because we were like 22.
Oh my God, you guys were babies at that point. They thought you were married.
They thought we were married because we were like, oh, we're celebrating our 1 year anniversary. And they were like,
are you 21?
Yeah. Oh, and we were like, no dating. Yeah, it was really funny. We because we like didn't really have any money because we were still, I guess Jeff had just graduated. I was still in college. I think he had graduated. Yeah, and I was still in college. And the vivid memory from that trip was watching, we rented from the front desk all of the Austin Powers movies on VHS. I was like VCR, but that's the thing you play them on VHS, and watched them in the room because we had limited funds. So yeah, that's the vivid memory from our 1 year dating anniversary.
That's kind of amazing. That is a very 21 year old
right
anniversary.
Yeah, it was we had a lot of fun. That was a good time. So the racial makeup of the city, surprise 82.5% white.
I am shooketh.
I am so surprised. 6.9% Black, 0.8% Native American, 1.4% Asian, 0.1% Pacific Islander, 3.1% of our favorite things, some other race, and Hispanic or Latino were 8.4% of the population. I thought this was really interesting. Also not surprising because Newport, I said at the beginning, it's a summer resort destination. So just like a lot of towns that are destinations, the people who live there aren't necessarily super wealthy. It's mostly the people who go there for vacation that are wealthy and drive up the prices of literally everything. Mm-hmm. The estimated median annual income for a household in the city is actually only $61,000, which is low. But when you think about these crazy, I mean, it's not super low, but like for an area like Newport, that's relatively low given the like crazy houses and mansions that are there. So just, something to keep in mind. It's all those fancy people going to visit. So male full-time workers had a median income of $52,000 versus $41,000 for female, also surprising. And the per capita income for the city was only $35,000.
And yeah, I mean, I'm not super surprised because honestly, like you said, it completely is like all the uber wealthy people go and they have their huge mansions and it's just like, oh, do you guys want to do a mansion tour?
Yeah, totally.
Of these, like, people's homes?
Because what's crazy? So 10.7% of the population lives below the poverty line. Like, that's crazy town. And so, like, the thing is, like, you think about, like, the pandemic and the, and, like, places like Newport that depend on the people who live there, who depend on the hospitality industry to be their main driver in the summertime, to be their main driver. I can only imagine how much they are struggling right now. So this is my little blip in there to say, support small, support local.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, don't worry about shopping at Amazon this Christmas. Maybe, like, you know, buy some gift cards from your favorite restaurants and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah,
so throw 100%. That out there.
100%.
The average housing price is $551,000. I actually was surprised it was that low, just given the, you know, largeness.
Big. The mansions.
The houses are big. Oh, my gosh.
The largeness.
Mom brain is kicking in. Anyway, that's Newport.
I will take over for you, friend. You can have a nice little break. You can grab a glass of vino if you choose.
Thank you. My brain stopped working.
Buckle up, because it's bad. Need more wine.
Yes! Let's do this thing.
This one is it's a sad one.
Oh, no.
Have you ever heard of Sonny Von Bülow?
I don't believe so.
Okay, I hadn't
either.
It does
not ring a bell.
I literally searched, because you know me, socialite crimes and scandals, and this is what I came up with. Yep. So I got my information from American Justice. The episode was called Wealth of Evidence, which, love good old American Justice, just like power, privilege, and justice. So A&E, man, that was where it was at back in the day.
I am into it.
Also, of course, Wikipedia, and then two New York Times articles, one from Anid Nemi. Okay, so now you have to bear with me because a lot of these names are really difficult because they're, like, Austrian names, and I struggle to pronounce anything, so here we go. All right, so Sonny Von Bülow was born Martha Sharp Crawford on September 1st, 1932 in Manassas, Virginia. She was born to George Crawford and Annie Laurie Warmack and was affectionately called Choo Choo for the first few years of her life because she was born on her dad's rail car. How cute is that?
That's so cute. Choo Choo?
Choo Choo, yeah.
Obsessed with that. That's adorable.
So she was later nicknamed Sunny due to her sweet nature. She was a socialite. She came from opulent wealth. Her maternal grandfather was the founder of the International Shoe Company. And her father was the founder of Columbia Gas and Electric. And upon his death, he left his three-year-old daughter $100 million fortune. In 1935.
What the heck would that be today? What was the total?
$100 million.
$100 million. And what was the year again?
1935.
1935 in today's dollars. Okay, I'm adding commas because for some reason they don't. They didn't put commas in here.
Just list off all the zeros.
It 1906423.
Is it like 1.9 billion?
19
million?
Million?
No.
Wait, no, 19 billion?
It must be.
Is that real?
Well, it wouldn't be less. It was $100 million.
That was for $1 million. It didn't actually calculate it for me. Thanks, butthead.
Okay, so it was a lot. It was a good
job. It was a lot, guys. So multiply
I would take the $100 million now. I don't need it to grow.
I don't need it to grow. Just give me it.
A little bit of scandal, but not really scandal. I looked up her father because I was like, oh man, he like died so young. He did not. He was 73 when he died. He was in his 60s when he married her mother, who was 27.
Oh. She was like, give me that money, girl.
That boy. Lady, she knows what the fuck is up. Okay, so, and you know what? Granted, they probably had like a very happy marriage. So I'm just being a douche, but yeah. Again, I'm a bitch. Okay, so Sunny married. Oh, this is great. Bear with me. Sunny married Prince Alfred Edward Frederick Vinches Martin Maria von Auersperg. Can you imagine saying that in your vows?
People, royalty have like the longest names. They've been named after like every person that came before them.
Well, funny enough, he wasn't really royalty anymore at the time.
Even though he was a pauvre.
He got married on July 20th, 1957. So even though he had the title Prince, she met Alfred when he was a tennis instructor at a Swiss resort. He was her tennis instructor. So essentially what had happened was because of the fall of the, I think it's Austria-Hungary or Austria-Hungary Empire, his family like fell out of power.
I see. I was going to say, are we actually talking about Prince, Purple Prince? Purple Prince. He doesn't have any other name, so I don't know what else to call him, but Prince.
Artist formerly known as Alfred. There we go. No, I think he just kept the title, and this is what made me laugh, because I think about all the times I've declared myself something, and I'm like, yeah, I do the same thing. I'd be like, yeah, once a princess, always a princess, so deal with it.
I'm still a princess.
So they had two children together, Alexander and Annie Laurie, which I think is so cute. She named her daughter after her mom. And Annie Laurie went by the name Alla. So the couple didn't have a lot in common. Sonny did not appreciate his flirtatious nature and big game hunting, which led to the couple's divorce in 1965. In the settlement, Alfred received a cool $1 million and two houses.
Ah, yes.
That's a decent divorce, if I do say so myself. I wouldn't
complain. I'd be like, okay.
And they were young when they got married. I mean, she was 24 and he was 20.
And how long were they married for?
Damn it, math. Oh. 8 years.
I mean, yes. That's 57
to 65.
That's a pretty good ROI, honestly. Like, if you're gonna if you're gonna marry someone and that's gonna be your settlement, and you only have to be married for 8 years, I can do that.
Not the worst. This is the other interesting thing, right? So, her two kids from her first marriage are technically prince and princess, but then her third daughter has like no title.
Poor thing. She has to at least, like, self-proclaim her a duchess or something.
Imagine if your two siblings were prince and princess and you were just like, and here's fuckface over here.
You would never hear the end of it. Can you imagine as the youngest? You know, OMG.
I know, right? Ooh, must have been good for that self-confidence. So shortly after her divorce, Sunny married Klaus von Bülow. July 6th, 1966. Girl wasted no time.
She was like, I'm ready. I'm ready to give my next $1 million and two houses away.
No doubt about it. I'm ready to get hurt again. Michael Scott. They got married in New York City, and they lived in New York City. She and Klaus had one daughter together, Cosima. I think her name is Cosima. Yeah.
I think that's a very pretty name.
It is a really pretty name, and she's a very pretty girl. Well, she's a woman now, but I digress. Okay.
She was a girl.
She was. Klaus and Sunny had a primary residence on Fifth Avenue facing Central Park. Boom. And sometime during her second marriage, Sunny acquired Clarendon Court in Newport, Rhode Island. I don't know what acquired means. I don't know if she bought it or it was given to her or whatever. It just said acquired, but. So
when you're that wealthy, you just acquire things. You don't have to buy them anymore.
Just like one of our previous episodes when it was like, the colonists acquired the land from the native. No, they took it.
Exactly how that works.
So maybe she went to Clarendon Court and was like, mine.
I declare this is mine.
God, you know, when a house has a name, fuck.
You know it. So, you know his fancy life.
So the estate was a 23-room Georgian mansion on 10 acres of land overlooking the ocean.
Sounds wonderful.
Sonny had the lawn lowered 17 feet for a better view.
She had the lawn lowered?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that was an option.
I didn't either, but she had it done so she could see the ocean better. And you know what? Technically, from my house, you could probably see the sea if you bulldozed all the houses in front of me for like a mile.
Totally. If you stood on my roof, you could see the ocean.
You just have to get up there. Okay. So, she had a big, beautiful home. However, Sonny and Klaus did not have a happy marriage for long. And by 1979, the couple was openly talking about divorce. So on December 21st, 1980, paramedics were called to the Clarendon Court residence when Sonny was found unresponsive on the bathroom floor. When paramedics arrived, she had a body temperature of 81 degrees and her heart was only pumping at 35 beats per minute.
Oh,
81 degrees. I can't believe that. She had an unexplained cut on her lip. There was no blood elsewhere in the bathroom, and the blood had congealed, meaning it had been there for quite a while. She was rushed to the Newport Hospital in a comatose state that she would never wake from. Initial blood tests showed that she had low blood sugar and high levels of insulin. So I don't know exactly what, they just said 216 is the number. I was like, what's the measurement? They just said 216. So for insulin, 216, but a normal range is 35 to 145. And she was docked at 216. Jeez. Mm-hmm. And she had trace barbiturates in her system. So doctors determined that she must have somehow received a dose of insulin, as this was beyond what the normal human body could make. On the way to the hospital, Klaus had a cold demeanor, which struck the EMTs as odd.
And listen to those EMTs.
Well, the crime and justice people, the EMTs were like, it was weird. Like, normally people are like, you'll be fine, or asking us, is he gonna die? And he was just like, whatever. So, cool.
Interesting. He was just like, man, it's just my wife, whatever. If she goes, she goes.
So, yeah. Then 4 weeks later, after his wife had fallen into a coma, Klaus was vacationing with his mistress, Alexandra Isles.
Oh, was he?
We're so chill, aren't we? We're so chill.
You know, nothing really bothers me anymore. I've really seen everything, so.
So let's backtrack a little bit. This was not the first time Sonny had fallen into a comatose state.
What?
Yeah. On December 26, 1979, Sonny was spending Christmas again in Newport when she was found unconscious and rushed to the hospital. She fell into a coma, but miraculously recovered and had no memory of anything. She was diagnosed. Yeah. She was diagnosed as hypoglycemic of unknown origin, which is the strangest diagnosis I've ever heard.
That is a diagnosis.
That's a diagnosis. And told to be cautious of sugar intake and not going too long without eating. Dude, it was the 70s.
She went into a coma. It's not like she just passed out.
I mean, I don't know. Do not know. So obviously Alexander and Ala were a touch suspicious, and they contacted lawyer Richard Q for legal counsel. And he was a former prosecutor, but now was like a private lawyer. Alexander recalled seeing his mother struggle to climb up the stairs the night before. He ended up carrying her up the stairs and put her to bed. He looked around her room for sleeping pills to explain why she was so drowsy. Unable to find an explanation, he chalked it up to pre-holiday exhaustion, as she had been doing so much to prepare for Christmas, and it was her favorite time of year, which honestly breaks my heart even more. Like, it's her favorite time of year, you know? Yeah.
And also, like, who is going so hard decorating for Christmas that their spouse needs to carry them up to bed.
That was her son.
I mean, that their son needs to carry them up to bed. Like, you have to be really dedicated to your Christmas craft in order to be that, like, I can't go on anymore. I've been decorating too hard. Like,
come I know.
On. Come
well,
on.
he was young too. He was 21. He wasn't old. You know, I can see being a naive 21-year-old. I can. Oh,
for sure. But somebody should have noticed that, like, that's not normal.
Well, maybe the person who should have noticed didn't really give a shit.
Foreshadowing.
Well, kind of. I'll leave it up to you. Oh. This is a choose your own adventure. It's not, but it kind of feels like it. So one of Klaus's stepchildren remembered seeing a curious black bag with medication and vials. The lawyer had Alexander and a private investigator go to the Clarendon Court residence to find the black bag. They brought a locksmith with them in case Klaus's closet where he kept the bag was locked. So this is where it gets, I don't 100% know because I've read a couple of different articles that say different things, but it's unclear if the locksmith left before or after they found the black bag, but they ended up finding it and they did not take any fingerprints or photographic evidence. The bag contained vials, needles, and one vial in particular was labeled insulin. It was sent to the family doctor for analysis, who told them he found insulin on the needle and they needed to go to the police. Which, who is this doctor who has this time on his hands to do? Like, can you imagine if you went to, like, Ellie's pediatrician and you were like, can you please do an analysis?
Be like, I have better things to do and lots of other things to do.
Hard pass. So when the police became involved, they interviewed the maid. This sounds like Clue. They interviewed
the maid. I was just going to say.
Alexander and Klaus.
In the bathroom with a candlestick.
Yeah.
In the basement with a syringe.
So along with a few other people, and they took inventory of the bag. The bag contained, now this guy was packing. It contained Valium, morphine, codeine, needle with traces of insulin. This guy wasn't fucking around. That's man.
Not strange.
Well, most of it was prescribed to him, which is funny that they say most of it, because I was like, what was it prescribed to him?
Yeah. They're like, yeah, well, you know, some of it was prescribed, so we just didn't even bother looking at the rest. We just made some assumptions.
Yeah. So the maid, I watched like part of her testimony. She is clearly from somewhere in Eastern Europe, like just like that stereotypical, like, who you think of as a maid who's like this older woman and she cares for the lady of the house so much. And I'm not like making fun of her, like she was really sweet. I felt bad for her.
Oh, poor thing.
So the maid told police that she had previously seen Klaus with a vial of insulin and asked him what it was for. She also detailed the events of the 1979 coma, so the one before, mm-hmm. stating that she could tell Sonny was really sick, but Klaus didn't seem to give a shit and didn't do anything about it. She saw Sonny laying in the bed, gasping for breath, and her hands were really cold. Klaus continued to lay on the bed for much of the day, with Sonny in this state beside him.
Klaus is like, don't give a bother. Everything's fine. Like,
Klaus, first of all, that's like really shitty to do. Second of all, why are you laying in bed all day, bro?
So no one will notice.
And at first, he, like, wouldn't really let her in the room either, even though she could hear Sonny moaning on the other side of the door. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Nice guy.
Nice.
Alexander had not seen a vial of insulin prior to the coma. However, he did tell police that his stepfather informed him of his failing marriage to his mother. Klaus, this is a weird thing, too. Klaus told Alexander that his mother could not have sex after the birth of Cosima, and therefore he had to look for it elsewhere. Why are you telling children about this?
What?
Why? I mean, he wasn't like a child, even still, like, I don't know.
Thank yeah, you, don't no tell thanks. Me. Tell someone else about that.
Yeah. It was also no secret that Klaus had a mistress. He really didn't hide it at all. Alexander Isles told him that he needed to get a divorce if they were to stay together and gave him 6 months. This is where... Yeah, well, she's an interesting girl herself.
Oh, okay, well.
I mean, not like the worst, but just very, very dramatic in court, which she is a soap opera actress, so.
Ah, well then, there you go.
This is where a possible motive comes in.
Okay.
Sunny had $100 million fortune to her name, which Klaus would not get if he divorced her. Detectives believe it was greed that drove him to kill his wife.
I mean, that's a pretty solid, like,
yeah,
that's a solid one.
So detectives surprised Klaus in front of his apartment asking for an interview. They wanted to catch him off guard so that he wouldn't be able to prepare, and they succeeded. During the interview, Klaus was asked if Sunny needed insulin, to which he replied, quote, by God, that's the last thing she would need. 3 days later, Klaus was back in Newport. Police obtained a warrant to search his house and interviewed him a second time. Police, okay, so this is like observations of what happened when they were there. So police found his closet unlocked and open. A scratch pad on his desk said, quote, black box. And a black metal box was in the closet where he kept the black bag. During the interview, he excused himself. And when he came back, the closet was locked and the note was gone.
Oh my gosh.
This guy has no chill. Like
none. Nada. None.
Also, bro, you had 3 days. Get it together.
Seriously, though.
But I think, honestly, at the time, I don't think he knew that the detectives had already taken a look at his black bag.
This, I can't even.
So, detectives also looked into the positioning of Sunny's body when she was found. Sunny was laying down with her head directly under the toilet and her nightgown above her waist. There was no blood in the bathroom, even though she had a cut and no explanation for why her nightgown would be bunched up. One of the detectives tried out the scene with his wife and found that when he carried her to the bathroom and let her slide down his arm onto the floor, the nightgown would bunch up around her waist as it was caught on his arm.
That was very smart.
Yeah. In July 1981, Klaus was indicted on 2 counts of attempted murder. His daughter, Cosima, was the only child to support him, stating that she had seen him talk to lawyers, telling them he had nothing to hide and to investigate everything, and that was enough for her. Which, truthfully, like, I don't blame the girl. I feel for her. Like, your mom dies.
That's a hard situation, for sure.
It is. The trial was obviously a high-profile case, and one of the first in Rhode Island to have cameras in the courtroom.
Oh, interesting.
The prosecutor knew it would be a tough case to try, as there were no witnesses, purely circumstantial evidence.
This is very The Staircase.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Yeah.
It kind of is. Though much of the public had already determined he was guilty. The prosecution believed he did not want a divorce so that he could inherit $14 million that would be left to him upon Sonny's death. So this is just... Klaus's defense was that he was a victim of a jealous public. His children were pinning this on him so they would inherit more from Sonny.
Oh, come on. Get over yourself,
Klaus. And that Sunny had taken the fatal dose of insulin as a fad to lose weight. Have you ever
I've never heard of that.
No. And also, Brandon brought up a good point to me when I was doing my research yesterday. He was like, it was the 80s. They had cocaine.
Yeah, exactly. Why are you going to go with insulin when you could go with Coke?
Also, I think, honestly, at this point, it's so sad to say, I think Coke is cheaper than fucking insulin, especially, like, nowadays, which is ridiculous.
I would assume so. I mean, I have no idea, but I would assume
so. You've heard of the whole, like, big pharma stuff where people who have diabetes, like, can't get their...
Yes.
So bad. So terrible.
So bad. So horrible.
What the fuck? okay. So, Klaus had also been spreading rumors that Sunny had a drinking problem as well.
Klaus is just really, he's just a really, like,
he's a very nice guy. Very
nice guy. Person.
Yeah. Seems like a real, real stand-up man.
Real peach.
After 3 months of testimony, Klaus was found guilty and sentenced to 30 years in prison. This elicited no reaction from Klaus. Okay. Jump to May 1982. Klaus is released after he paid $1 million bail and began looking for an appellate lawyer, which I don't know how in God's name he can get released while he's looking for an appellate lawyer, but yeah, he did.
Really, yeah, that's very interesting. I don't know how that's very odd.
So he found Alan Dershowitz, who is a Harvard law professor. Dershowitz at first looked at his, like, he had kind of filed it in the newspaper and he was like, yeah, you're guilty. But then upon looking deeper into it, he did find quite a few flaws in the original trial. So as Dershowitz put it, he wasn't looking to find him innocent. He was looking to find flaws in a fair trial, which he did. Interesting. So Richard Q, the family's private lawyer, would not hand over his notes. There were 4 insulin tests done at the hospital, one showing the 216 that was presented at trial, but there were 3 others that showed results that varied from 0 to 350. What? Yep. The insulin that was found on the needle indicated that the needle had been dipped in insulin. And when they tested the lab that had found the insulin on those needles, they sent like a bunch of different samples and they got a bunch of false positives for insulin.
What?
Yeah. So how then bizarre. the biggest issue is the black bag.
Yeah.
Alexander was allowed to obtain the bag from the closet since it was his house. However, once it was handed over to police without a warrant, it became a legal seizure. So Klaus won his case and the Rhode Island Supreme Court overturned his conviction.
Oh my goodness.
So the notes that came from Q had no record of them talking about like insulin in the black bag and like the maid asking about or him about the vial of insulin and all of that. So even though she like said it at trial, it's not like she had said it like upon the first interview kind of a thing. So Q explained that this, just because it's not written down doesn't mean they didn't talk about it, yeah. Which like, okay, I can kind of understand that, but also like, aren't you supposed to take like diligent notes?
Yeah,
you
know? Absolutely.
So in April 1985, Klaus was tried again. However, this time the prosecution could not use the black bag. His mistress testified against him in the first trial. And this time she like went all in with testifying against him.
Interesting.
So she talked about how she told him about a diabolical scheme to kill his wife after an argument in 1979. She said, quote, "He watched her knowing she was in a bad way. When it was close to the point of dying, he couldn't go through with it and called and saved her life." Then when she was asked, like, why just stay with him type deal?
Yeah.
She was like, "I knew what happened and I continued to see him because we all do crazy things when we're in love."
My, oh no.
I'm dead serious.
She did not say that.
I'm
she
dead serious.
Said that?
Oh. I mean, it's not like a direct quote, but I watched her like say it on the stand and I was like, girl.
She thought she, not only is she a soap actress, she thinks she's in a soap opera. What?
Oh, she my. Was something on the stand.
But I mean, I would watch. She spoke up. I'm like a little late here, lady, but I mean, I at least just spoke up eventually.
Yeah, it's just, it's interesting because the first time she testified, she was like, "Well, at first I didn't believe he actually did it, but the longer it goes on, like, I'm kind of like, oh my God, maybe he did do it," which I can kind of see as more sure. understandable because you're with him 4 weeks, you were vacationing with him 4 weeks after his wife went into a coma. And now you're like, "Well, we all do crazy things when we're in love." And it's like, girl, okay, listen, you either like don't care or oh, yeah. you are so money hungry that you just decided to do it, or you just decided to testify for whatever. Like, I don't know. But none of it makes you look good, friend.
No. Yeah. No, totally. Oh, my. Interesting. Yeah.
So, in addition, the doctor who originally testified for the prosecution saying that it was insulin that caused the coma ended up testifying for the defense in the second trial, saying that no one could be certain insulin caused the coma. He stated that it may have been a lack of oxygen to the brain, but he was not allowed to say this on the stand during his first trial.
Interesting.
After 6 weeks of deliberation, Klaus was found not guilty.
What?
Yep. His lawyer, Alan Dershowitz, made an excellent point. And this, I had a lot of respect for this guy. I really did. I mean, everybody deserves a defense, like defense lawyers, you know sure. what I mean? Like,
sure.
He was an appellate lawyer, though. He didn't work on his defense. He was solely trying to figure out if he got a fair trial. And
sure,
in Klaus's defense, it wasn't totally fair because of some of the issues that we brought up.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and it seems like that's fairly common that that will happen. Like, I mean, I brought up the staircase earlier, but, like, you look at the staircase and the trial that he got the first time around that focused on, like, things that had nothing to do with the case and
right,
very, very shoddy, you know, work of
investigation. Right.
Not investigators. Well, I guess the investigators, but also the blood spatter experts, quote unquote.
Yeah.
So similar situation. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So his lawyer brought up made an excellent point. And he said, if he had been poor, he still would be in jail. Because, quote, without excellent money, point. You can't get justice.
100%. That is spot on. Yes.
Still resonates today, too.
150%.
It's so true. He put his $1 million bail up and was able to find a top-notch lawyer.
Yeah, absolutely. That, I mean, that's what pretty much everything comes down to.
Mm-hmm. So because Cosima supported her father, she was written out of the maternal grandmother's will, leaving everything to her two half-siblings. I know, we get petty.
That is rough. Family stuff is rough.
Ella and Alexander filed a lawsuit against Klaus, claiming that he schemed to defraud and murder their mother. Instead of taking the stand at trial, Klaus agreed to divorce Sonny, renounce the fortune, and keep quiet. So he also
divorce somebody after they died?
She didn't die.
I mean, what? I'm so confused. Okay.
No, she didn't die. I'm sorry if I didn't make this clear. She's in a coma.
Oh, still?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry if that wasn't clear. No, she is in a coma. Yeah. So he divorced her while she was in the coma.
Oh.
At the wishes of her kids. She, and he also partially did this so that Cosima would be able to claim her portion of her grandmother's estate. So after that, the settlement with Klaus, there was a settlement with the three kids, and Cosima got a portion of her grandmother's estate.
Interesting.
Which, I don't know. I can't throw stones because I don't know what I'd be like in this situation, but it's just one of those things that it's like, this is what we care most about.
It is. For them, for a lot of them, it is. And it's like, and sometimes you wonder if it's like, so sometimes you wonder if it's like, if it's actually the money thing and it's actually like the possessions thing, or if it's the like, this is the only thing I feel like I have control over, so therefore I have
maybe to
control it. So
maybe who knows? And I just, luckily I'll never be like that because we're gonna have to settle with enough money.
I'm an only child, so I don't have to worry about any of this.
I'm more concerned about us saying something stupid and getting hit with like a defamation suit from one of these ultra rich people that we can't pay.
Yeah, sorry, we don't have any money, so you can't take it. Sorry.
So as of 2008, the siblings were trying to reconcile because that's what their mother would have wanted. So that's like the bright spot there.
Sure.
Ala and Alexander founded the Sonny von Bülow National Victim Advocacy Center in their mother's honor. Very sweet.
Nice.
Klaus moved back to London after the trial and lived there until his death in 2019. He was 92 years old.
Oh, wow.
And Sonny lived the rest of her days in the Milstein building at the New York Presbyterian Columbia Hospital and Nursing Home. She remained in a coma for 28 years until her death on December 6th, 2008. She was 76 years old.
What?
She was comatose for 28 years with like no brain activity.
Oh my gosh, that's insane.
It that to me is like one of the most heartbreaking things. Like,
absolutely.
Number one, going and hoping that your mom wakes up.
Yeah.
And number two, being left in a coma for 28 years is horrifying to me.
Yeah. Well, because the thing is, like, we only know so much, right, about like
someone who's in a coma or someone who's in that kind of state, it's like, what are they experiencing? Because there's all different levels of what people are experiencing when they're in that state. Like, what is she experiencing? What did she experience for that 28 years?
I don't know, because truthfully, like, I kind of wonder if coma, if she was really just, if she was brain dead.
Yeah.
And I almost hope that, because if she's showing no brain activity, like, she is brain dead. And I would hope that, just because you wouldn't want somebody in a coma to be in a coma for 28 years. But I'm pretty sure people in comas do have some brain act. I don't know. I shouldn't be saying anything I don't know about. But
yeah, I have no idea.
I imagine that people in comas have some type of brain activity, because the goal is not to keep somebody in a coma forever. It's to keep them in a coma for a shortened period of time.
Sure. Yeah.
So yeah,
that's crazy. Oh, what a crazy case.
That's, yeah, it's a poor thing. Like, she sounds like, yeah, she divorced, and I'm sure she wasn't a perfect person, but she really didn't do anything wrong, you know. Just, poor thing. Know,
right?
Jeez. And she was clearly very well loved by her kids.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh, well, I don't know, I'm trying to find that's just generally sad.
I told you. Drink I more like, wine.
Usually when you get to the end of those, you're like, well, at least da-da-da, but
there's no at least. I feel so bad.
There's no at least. There's no at least. Well, thanks for that.
Actually, you want to hear something worse? You want me to add to it?
Oh, sure. Yeah, pile it on.
Her ex-husband ended up dying after being in a coma as well when he was in an automobile accident in Austria.
What are the chances?
I know. So their kids lost, number one, both of their parents young. Oh. And two, both of their parents were in comatose states before they died. Yup. Told you it could get worse.
Love that. Cherry on top. Yum. Anyway.
Sorry, guys. I'm dark today.
She's just feeling dark. You are the dark princess, the moonshine or whatever.
Well, that's what my last name means. It means dark hero.
Does it?
Yeah.
That's what Julie
means. Dark hero. Yep.
You're my dark hero.
Oh, how cute.
I'll have to look up what my names mean. I didn't know.
Well, is there anything fun going on in Newport?
Well, so I, as always, taking it the spooky route.
Oh, yes.
Because, you know, that's just how I do. So I am headed to one of the mansions in Newport. So I got this from the Newport Buzz. There were a few other articles that talk about all the haunted places. A lot of the mansions are haunted. Surprise, surprise, because they're all being killed by their wealthy spouses. So Belcourt Castle in Newport, Rhode Island is a large Louis the 13th style estate. It was all in Roman numerals, so I just had to, hopefully I got that right.
I won't question you.
Yeah, it's close enough. Style estate that has a rich line of owners. So starting with Oliver Belmont and his wife, Elva Vanderbilt, Elaine and Louis Lorillard, which I don't know who they are. But today this castle is owned by the founder of Alex and Ani. Caroline Raffelian, something like that. She is the founder of Alex and Ani. So kind of cool. So there have been many reported hauntings over the years at this castle. So I'm going to read you a few of them. So a young female tour guide, while leading a group of visitors through the French Gothic ballroom, heard a male voice tell her several times to get out.
Oh, God, that's the worst.
Right? All during that summer season, she felt uncomfortable and didn't come back for the next season. So that
I would have left on the first get out.
Oh, yeah. I would have, like, never come back. I would have been like, get out. Sure. Never coming back. See ya. Because that's a hard no for me. Another time, a male entity seems to appear in full monk attire, brown robe and hood, and wander around wherever his statue is located.
So he first appeared at the end of the bed in Donald and Harl's bedroom, so one of the former owners, in semi-solid state, wearing a monk's robe and hood. When his statue was located near the first floor ladies' room, his figure was seen walking out of the nearby grand hall and into the ladies' room. He was a very, very, very naughty monk. this entity communicated through Virginia, so I believe that's one of the other former owners, and told of his wishes to be moved into the chapel. After being moved into the chapel, a visitor saw his solid form preparing for a mass in the chapel. She asked one of the former owners when the mass was going to be held. Imagine her surprise when she found out the truth and that she had just seen the spirit of a monk.
Oof.
So that is creepy. Another one, the angry spirit of the knight relives his death when a spear was thrown through his helmet visor.
Oh, God.
Which, a little gruesome. It was not a pleasant death, as you would think. His screams and shrieks of agony are heard by staff and family for many years, especially during the month of March when he was killed. His spirit communicated with Virginia again and told her that he had been left for dead by his fellow knights, so he died alone with his wounds. During tours, his helmet is said to turn by itself to check out these strangers in the room.
So how is there a knight in Newport?
It's a really good question.
is this Virginia making shit up?
That's a really good question. So unless like maybe the helmet was shipped in from somewhere where there were knights,
and maybe so
it's the haunted helmet.
Or is Virginia a medium?
I mean, Virginia seems to be communicating with a lot of these people, so perhaps.
She wakes up, I have another story, friends!
It's like, you just have a really vivid imagination. There's another one with a lady in a ball gown who can be seen on the second floor gallery, and then the last one is an older woman in pink attire who would appear in one of the bedrooms on occasion. And they think that it's maybe one of the, a mother visiting one of the daughter-in-laws, so who formerly lived there. So lots of different hauntings at this particular castle in Newport. But yeah, apparently a ton of them are haunted. So that is my little haunted coverage of the Belcourt Castle.
I enjoyed that.
Thank you.
That was good.
Thank you.
That was good. Made me feel a little better.
A little better about life,
about the terribleness
that is everything. Yay! Oh my goodness. Well, great job.
Yeah, same to you, friend.
Thanks. I'm so hungry.
I have to get ready for bar too.
Oh, you are so good. I'm so proud of you.
I'm just gonna cry the whole time. I'm gonna be like, Megan, you have to do this, and I'll be like,
I have to be here. I'm going to go eat leftover Chinese food. So I'm going to do the opposite of bar, which is worse for me. I should be doing bar instead.
I'm jealous. But we hope that you all have a great day, night, morning, wherever you are in your space right now.
Yeah.
And thanks for tuning in.
Yeah. Stay safe. Happy Thanksgiving. Give thanks
for,
you know, your
health. Eat a lot of turkey. Stuff.
Yeah, do that. Mashed potatoes. Nom. And we'll see you next time.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to rate and subscribe. See you next time.